Welcome everyone to our celebration of National Health Center Week and the relocation and expansion of primary health care's outreach and pharmacy programs. We are honored to have Senator Harkin with us to help us celebrate. I'm Ted Bozen, the Executive Director of Iowa-Nebraska Primary Care Association, whose members are the 19 community health centers in Iowa and Nebraska. Before I introduce Kelly Huntsman, the Executive Director of Primary Health Care, who is going to describe for all of us the outreach and pharmacy programs and what having these wonderful facility means to their clinic and to their patients, I would ask all of us here to remember the purpose of this gathering is to celebrate this great expansion of services and to have a productive conversation on healthcare reform. Senator Harkin will be answering questions from the press after his remarks conclude, and without further delay, it's my pleasure to announce Kelly Huntsman and introduce Kelly, who is the Executive Director of the Primary Health Care here.
Thank you, Ted. It's a little warm in here today, so I will keep my comments brief. We are thrilled to be here in this facility today. It is Community Health Center Week across the country, and we are celebrating that in what will be our new outreach project and pharmacy. He's hot too, and he wants out. Just to tell you a little bit about primary health care and federally qualified health centers, we are a community health center that has been located in Des Moines for nearly 30 years. We provide health care. Are you having trouble hearing me? Okay, I'm sorry. We've been here for about 30 years. We provide health care, medical, dental, mental health services, case management support, and lots of supportive services for patients in our community. Many of our folks are uninsured, about 62%, I believe, somewhere around there, are uninsured or underinsured, and we are here to help them receive care. We're very proud of what we do. We're very pleased to be in the community. And just to give you a little bit of a snapshot, in 2008, we served 22,000 patients across all of our sites. We are located with four sites in Des Moines. We have one on Southeast 14th, one on East 29th, one on at the Oak Ridge Project, which is actually being relocated here. And then we also have a clinic in Marshalltown and a pharmacy here in Des Moines. We have been very fortunate over the years to be able to expand to serve more patients. Senator Harkin has actually been extremely instrumental in that. He has been very supportive of community health centers and what we can do. The reason we're in this building today, it's not finished, it's hot, but it is the proposed site of our new outreach project. We are relocating a clinic that is currently located at 979 Oak Ridge, along with our pharmacy that is located on Southeast 14th Street. And those will both be consolidated into this location. Very accessible for our patients, has a much greater potential to serve patients in the environment that we feel is appropriate for those that we serve. It's been a long road for us. The economy obviously has posed some challenges for us, but with Senator Harkin's support, with some stimulus funding that we received, with funding from the Polk County Board of Supervisors and many other local foundations, we are ready to begin about $1 million project to renovate this site, and we are thrilled about what that will mean for us and for our patients. Just a quick timeline, there's a drawing up here, but it's really hard for everybody to see. What you're standing in right now is going to be exam room space. This is a 9-room exam clinic. The front part, which is over that direction, will house the registration area. To that side will be our case management services, where we help patients, I apologize for getting away from the mic, where we help patients get access to housing, where we help women and children to do things to be more productive and to take care of their children. Lots of services here. Across the hall will be our new pharmacy. So we are pleased as punch and to be able to bring this to you today. I think just to kind of transition, We have, like I said, we've been doing this for about 30 years. We are really committed to taking care of those patients in need. We see every day, we have providers in the room, we see every day the needs that are out there, the needs for quality health care, for quality mental health care, for dental services. And we understand the need for health care reform. And we just want to make sure that we can assure Senator Harkin, as well as all of you, that we are posed and we are ready to take care of those patients in need. And I think we can do a very nice job of that in this facility. You just have to have a little bit of imagination. Before I introduce Christina, she is a patient of ours, I wanted to recognize we have some folks in the audience from our board. Mike Schumann is one of our board members, Sergio Hernandez, and Karen Antle, and the gentleman with the baby, he was Ben. He's our board, also on our board, had to bring the little one along today, so we're glad to have them all here. I'd like to now introduce Christina Bell. She and her daughter Butterfly have been longtime patients for PHC, utilizing not only our clinic services, but also case management services for advocacy and housing and family service programs. I'd like to invite Christina to the podium to share her experiences at PHC.
Well, I'm Christina. I've been working with primary health care since I was 18 years old. I'm now 24. If it wasn't for primary health care, I would be in a lot bigger bind than I am today. They helped me get my housing. I've had my housing for a little over 7 months now. Every time, is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Every time I have something that goes wrong, or like I get sick or my daughter gets an ear infection, I go to primary health care for their clinic,
and they help me, you know, a lot better than a lot of other places I know that won't take me because of I don't have medical insurance, or, you know, because I broke my leg last year during Thanksgiving and I didn't have any way to be able to pay for the medication to get my leg back to the way it was supposed to be, I guess. And they helped me out. And if it wasn't for them, I would probably, well, not still have a broken leg, but I'd still be in pain. And I've been working with primary health care for a long time now. I love my worker, Alicia. She's been helping me out for a long time, helps me out every chance she gets. And my daughter loves primary health care too. They help me out with everything, whether it's rides on the bus or diapers. They're helping me with schooling and Social Security and my dental work. Sorry, it's really hot in here.
We really do apologize for the temperature. We did have the building is under construction. We don't have any fans or any. We're trying to find one, but we sincerely. So we'll move right on. We gather here at a time of great change, and most definitely in healthcare. The change is being championed by Senator Harkin from his passion for good nutrition and support and resources for the community health centers across the country, and especially in Iowa. He is helping community health centers be a strong part of the fabric of an improved healthcare system. Community health centers will endeavor to put in place the systems that will more directly assist patients in taking responsibility for their own care. We have to start doing prevention better, and the resources planned for community health centers will go a long way for us having the tools to build the necessary systems and guarantee the safety net system is not left out of reform. Senator Harkin, we thank you and the members of Congress for the opportunity to build our capacity, and we very much appreciate the help you have provided in making the growth of the program Kelly has described a reality. Here is Senator Tom Harkin.
Thank you very much. Thank
Thank you very much. Oh, thank you. Ted, thank you very much. And Kelly, thank you both. Ted, thank you for your leadership both for Iowa, Nebraska Primary Care. And Kelly, thank you for your leadership here in Des Moines. I just asked for a fan. I had, boy, this is a great turnout for my first meeting back in Iowa after we adjourned for the August recess. But I'm just sorry it's so hot in here. And
We're working on
trying to find a fan. I just didn't realize this many people would show up, but obviously a great deal of interest in this. But let's press on, okay? I'm sorry we don't have more chairs either. I don't know what to tell you. If you want to sit on the floor, I guess you can do that too. I guess there's no more chairs either. How about these? Yeah, at least get these out. At least get these out anyway.
Any more chairs?
Trying to get some air coming through here. Boy. Well, anyway, we'll press on. I thank Kelly and I thank Ted. I want to thank all the doctors, the nurses, and the staff for all the extraordinary work you do here. You know, I've always treasured something that one of my heroes once said, Hubert Humphrey. He said a long time ago, he said, the moral test of a nation is how it treats those who are in the dawn of life, the children, those who are in the twilight of life, the aged, and those in the shadows of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. Well, thanks to all of you folks here at Primary Health Care, we passed that moral test very well. You treat the young and the old as well as those in the shadows of life. In fact, you're committed to serving everyone who walks in the door. Those who can pay and those who can't pay all get the same high quality of care. And that is something that you can be very, very proud of. I just want you to know that I'm 100% committed to supporting you in your work. As chair of the Appropriations Committee on Health, I have no higher priority than to secure appropriate funding for community health centers, including this one. I was very pleased to be able to secure more than $1.5 million for this center in the Recovery Act, the stimulus bill that we passed earlier this year, which you're going to use to upgrade. I heard you talk about that. And you should be receiving your 2009 directed funding of $190,000, I'm told, sometime in the next few weeks. Now, in addition to thanking you for the great work you do here at Primary Healthcare, I want to spend some time this afternoon bringing all of you up to date on our efforts to pass comprehensive health reform in the Congress. As we have seen in recent days, opponents are pulling out all stops to kill the reform effort. This is a shame, because as you know all too well, the status quo is broken for tens of millions of Americans, including many of your patients and your clients who come in here. However, the status quo is working just fine for powerful special interests, including health insurance companies and pharma. Press just asked me back there about this, and I said, about all of the consternation. I said, well, this is good. The country should know about this. It should be fully debated and aired. But I said, there's a lot of misinformation getting out there. And I said, I think when you think about the fact that there's over $2 trillion, $2 trillion we're spending every year in our healthcare system, that's a lot of money on the table. And the people who are making a lot of money on that system would just as soon not change it, thank you very much. They like it just like it is. And so you're going to see a lot of effort by powerful interests to thwart the change that we are trying to make in healthcare. And that's understandable, a lot of money's at stake here. But I keep saying that, why are we doing health reform? Are we doing health reform to help the people of this country, or are we going to do health reform to help the insurance companies? It seems like that, to me, what it boils down to. We got to do health reform in order to help people to have better coverage and more stable coverage and to be able to rely upon a good system. So again, these folks are resorting to scare tactics, misinformation, and obstruction. There was a nationally coordinated meeting to interrupt meetings and stuff like that. I don't expect that to happen here. We're Iowans. We don't do that kind of stuff. But I saw it on television. But this time around, they're not going to succeed because too many people and too many U.S. businesses are being hurt by the current system.
Consider this. How would you react? How would you react if I proposed to you the following health care plan? It's guaranteed to at least double your insurance premiums over the next 10 years. It would fail to cover about 1 in 6 Americans, and over 70 Iowans would lose their health insurance every day. It would be the most expensive plan in the world, but leave Americans twice as sick with chronic disease as Europeans. It would deny you coverage if you had a pre-existing condition. And if you lost your job, you lose your coverage. And if you got seriously ill, then your insurance company could drop you the next time your plan came around. Now, if I told you that's the plan we were working on, you would say... You would say that this is a crazy plan.
It is.
Well, it is a crazy plan, but that just happens to be the plan that we have right now. So the
you show me one good Indian reservation with excellent medical care, and I'll be the first one to say, yes, I want to be jealous of that.
Well,
if you're proud of the Indian care, then we'll all go march.
See,
as I said,
there's a
great, let's do it.
There is a nationally. There is a nationally.
Why don't you go home?
Why don't you?
Let's sit down. Let's sit down. Okay.
All
right. As I said, as I said, there is a nationally coordinated effort to disrupt these meetings.
Who sent me here? Who sent me here? I sent myself. How dare you? How dare you claim that I'm part of a conspiracy? How dare you? If you want to talk about conspiracies, I'll tell you about conspiracies.
You want to hear what we want to know?
I'll tell you something. I read that bill. I don't know that you have. Let's tell you something. It reads like something that was brought up in the early 1930s
See?
In Germany.
Fire.
It is not good
Fire.
For the
world.
Well, if I might finish my introductory remarks, then we'll open it for questions and answers. I hope in a civilized manner, without yelling and interrupting anyone who wants to answer a question. Well, the reform legislation.
Hey, come on.
The reform legislation now working its way through Congress will do 5 things. It will reduce health costs in the years ahead. It will ensure quality, affordable coverage for nearly every American. And it will create a public insurance option while protecting individuals' choices of plans and doctors. In other words, if you like your current plan or your current doctor, you can keep them. Our goal basically is stable costs, stable coverage, and stable quality for the future. It will address the shortage of healthcare professionals by expanding and creating loan repayment programs, scholarships, and grants to encourage students to go into family practice, into primary care like here, and also encourage them to go into rural areas and underserved areas as family practitioners. It will also create a very sharp new emphasis on wellness and prevention that Ted mentioned, keeping people out of the hospital in the first place, and that was sort of my area on a health committee on which I serve that I drafted, and that was the wellness and prevention portion, and I'll be glad to talk about more of that in just a second. Now, that all sounds fine and dandy, but what does it mean for you as an individual here in Des Moines and central Iowa? Well, here are 8 things the reform system under the bill that we passed out of our health committee it will do. And this includes if you already have a good insurance plan that you like, which you can keep. But if you already have an insurance plan,
that's not until they change jobs and then it's gone.
Be quiet, let him talk.
Be quiet, let the man talk.
Hey, let this man tell the truth.
All right. I know it's hot in here, but let's keep our tempers down, okay? I know it's hot in here. But here's eight things that are in our bills, at least in the bill that we passed out of our committee. And again, this applies whether you have insurance now and you keep it, or whether or not you get a new insurance plan or whatever. One, it will outlaw discrimination for pre-existing conditions. Insurance companies will be prohibited. Insurance companies will be prohibited from refusing you coverage because of your medical history. Two, it will end the exorbitant out-of-pocket expenses, deductibles, or co-pays. Insurance companies will have to abide by yearly caps and how much they can charge for out-of-pocket expenses. In other words, you will know before you sign up for a plan, you will know what your annual out-of-pocket or deductibles will be at the beginning. And so you can comparison shop. Three, there will be absolutely no co-pays or deductibles for preventative care. This is what I put into the bill. Well, it was my part of it that I developed. That means that if you wanted to go in for screening or immunizations, mammograms, foot care if you're pre-diabetic, or colonoscopies, these will not have no co-pays or deductible. Every insurance program will have to cover those. I talked to a man in Northwest Iowa last week who has a small business. He has 12 employees, and he has a policy that for his employees is $5,000 deductible. And he just turned 50, and the doctor advised him to get his first colonoscopy, but it was $3,000. So he has to pay that out of pocket. And having just had a friend of mine who is on his deathbed because of colon cancer, because he never got a colonoscopy. And we know this is one of the cancers that's easily curable if you get it early, just like mammograms. If you get it early, you can really stop it and cure it. So the idea being to encourage people to seek preventative care, to get in as early as possible and stay healthy. Fourth, insurance companies will be prohibited from dropping or watering down insurance coverage if you become seriously ill, which they do right now. You can become ill, then when your plan is up for the next period, they can just drop you if you had a very short. They won't be allowed to do that under our bill. Five, unlike in the current system, insurance companies will be prohibited from charging you more because of your gender. Right now, insurance companies do charge women more, and they do it on the basis of gender, and they will not be allowed to do that. Six. Six, insurance companies will not be allowed to place annual or lifetime caps on the coverage you receive, which, again, a lot of people who get seriously ill, they bump up on their lifetime cap, and, well, that's it. And they don't have any place to turn. Seven, children will continue to be eligible for family coverage through the age of 26. And eight, people will have guaranteed insurance renewal. In other words, if your policy's up, there's only one reason that they can't renew your policy: if you don't pay your premiums. No other reason, no other health reason than can they refuse to renew your policy, as they do now all the time. So again, these are very big reforms, both in insurance, but also in wellness and prevention. And I think that's gonna make a huge positive difference in the lives of ordinary Iowans. Now, let me just say something near and dear to my heart, and that is the new emphasis on wellness and prevention. I think it will jumpstart the transformation of our system. I have been saying since 1992, when I think I first coined the phrase, I don't know, when I said we don't have a healthcare system in America, we have a sick care system. Everything is geared towards patching, fixing, and mending once you get sick. All the incentives are on that side of the ledger. What I think we gotta do is push more of these incentives to keeping you healthy and well and out of the hospital in the first place. And that's what we're trying to do with our wellness and prevention part of it. Our aim is to recreate America as a wellness society, a society focused on healthful lifestyles, good nutrition, plenty of physical activity, and preventing the chronic diseases that take such a toll on our bodies and budgets. 75% of spending on Medicare now are for chronic illnesses, most of which are preventable. Now, for example, We will require reimbursement for proven cost-effective preventative services, as I said, such as cancer screenings, nutrition counseling, smoking cessation programs. That means health professionals will be able to offer these services to patients before they get diseases, such as diabetes, cancer, or emphysema. Like right now, insurance companies, as well as Medicare, I might add, will pay $30,000 to amputate your foot once you get diabetes, but they will not provide any kind of counseling if you're pre-diabetic to keep you from getting diabetes and to keep you well. So again, your mother was right, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So these are the things that we're trying to do in a lot of different, but I just wanted to focus a little bit on that prevention and wellness, because I think really, to my way of thinking, about the only way we're really going to save money is if we start focusing on keeping people more healthy in our country and prevent these diseases in the first place. So I urge all of you to look at the bills and cut through a lot of the clutter that's coming out of Washington now, and be skeptical of those who try to scare you with a lot of half-truths and some of the ads. I'm not mentioning anybody. I just saw an ad yesterday. I was sitting in the barber chair, and I saw an ad, and it was pretty devastating. But then I saw who paid for it. It was GOP something or other paid for the ad. I'm just stating what was on the TV. It was a pretty scary ad. And quite frankly, I don't think that does service to really legitimate open debate. So I'll just say we need reform, because I think the status quo is unacceptable. I think we will succeed because failure is not an option. And with your support, we're going to create a reformed insurance and health system that works for all of us, not just for a few. And I want to thank all of the people here at Primary Healthcare and at Iowa, Nebraska for all the great work you do. Thank you very much. Thank you. I will take some questions. Boy, it is really hot. I just apologize for that. Well, you're front and center, Pink.
Senator, I was wondering why the push for a public plan, a single-payer plan, when obviously the public seems very much against it. And if that's the case, sir, that's the only problem. Why not just try
it? Will you let her ask her question, please? I beg of you, let's be generous and kind to one another. She has a legitimate question, and I will try to answer it as best I can.
Sir,
please.
You are correct. There are a lot of people scared out there. However, yeah. It seems the bone of contention seems the public plan. Reform is great. Reform is excellent. However, common sense reform is important. I think a lot of people agree that capitalism is the best way to regulate insurance companies.
Well, I guess I'd only respond by saying if capitalism, whatever that means in its broad context,
you don't know what it means?
If it is the best way to regulate, then why do we spend more than any other country in the world? And why are we 37th in terms of our health status? That's what's happening right now. Insurance companies are overcharging. The pharmaceutical companies are overcharging. And again, you don't have to take my word for it. I was just looking up the other day. I didn't write it all down here, but I got some of them.
Do you think they should make a profit?
I think insurance companies should make a profit. Did someone ask me that question? Sure, I think they should. But again, at what kind of a profit should they make? Well, I would put it this way: the top seven health insurance companies in America over the last 5 years had a combined increase in their net profits of 170%. The average salary of the CEOs of the top seven health insurance companies is $14.2 million a year. I'm not certain that that's the kind of money we want taken out of our healthcare system to pay high-priced executives and to pay pharmaceutical companies. So,
yeah.
Senator Burkett.
Well, you...
You, in your you words...
You, oh, wait, wait.
He's gone on you.
Please.
Let him ask his question.
Yeah.
In your just, introductory words, yes. You said that health care costs us $2 trillion a year.
Plus.
I'll take that as true.
Plus.
Plus. The banker bailout bill that you voted for has already cost us $23 trillion. You have enslaved me, my children, my grandchildren, anybody's great-grandchildren here to pay Wall Street bankers. We cannot pay that back. The healthcare system, what you're proposing, is merely a tax to give to the bankers. Yes, it is. You can look at me. I can show you in the bill where it says, the tax hereby imposed by this legislation shall not be called a tax. Well, that's called 1984. If you want, I'll go home and get the bill. I've got it highlighted. You know, I'm sure somebody else here has got it too. Now you have indebted the nation, and you're now trying to use this healthcare scamola to we got to do this. We're going to give it to the bankers. Every dollar you pay, every dollar he pays, every dollar this man here with the Obama shirt, everybody here. In this room, everybody in the country, when you pay your federal income tax, it goes to one place, the Federal Reserve Bank. It's a privately owned bank. They are sucking the lifeblood out of us right now. You voted for that TARP to give to the Federal Reserve. It's move on. Yeah, it's move on. We cannot pay back the Federal Reserve, the privately owned banker bank.
We have questions and just not positions, please.
He had a question, but I forget what the question was now. Who else has a question? Here, I'll go back. I'll try to go back and forth if I can here. Yes. Yes. Yeah, you're right there. Yeah.
How much is this plan like the plan that we see in Massachusetts currently? And also, is this plan going to be modeled after the Chappas plan that ThriveWest administers? Are the private insurance companies to become modeled after ThriveWest in Phoenix, who administers Chappas?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. I think there's some aspects of it that are like Massachusetts plan, but not all of the aspects of it.
Well, it also Chappas administers for all of the military, so in all of this great healthcare reform, what happens to the military plan as well?
Well, I know that someone asked a question earlier, it lodged in my mind, said something about Indian Health Services, and that's government-run plan. They don't want to be like that. But I would ask you, how about the Veterans Administration?
Yeah.
They do a darn good job. They do a very good job. Yes, 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 you, right here. Yes.
Uninsured, that sounds like a crisis, but actually, I don't think those statistics are accurate. When you go back to the 2005 census, many of those people are illegal aliens, almost 10 million of them are illegal aliens, and 17 million of those people are self-insured. They're not uninsured, and 10 million of these people are between jobs. Would have insurance company insurance coverage within 4 months. So I think there's a
If you have data on that, I would be more than happy to take a look at. If you have some data that you please give it to me. If you give it to me, I'll look at it. I mean, we look at a lot of the statistics and stuff like that, and I think that when they say there are 47 million Americans uninsured, you're right that some float in and out. You know, maybe they're insured when they're employed, then they become unemployed, then they're not insured. But at some, I think the correct way of saying is that at some point during the year, there are about 47 million Americans without some kind of insurance coverage.
Not American.
I don't think so. I don't think that includes illegal immigrants.
I'm sorry, we're running out of time.
I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. By the way, that's another, I just want to respond to this, that's another misinformation that's gotten out there that somehow these plans will cover illegal aliens. That is absolutely not true.
Because you can't ask them if they're illegal or not.
Going back.
You cannot, when you go to the doctor, you cannot ask if you are legal or not.
Tom, I'm sorry.
That's why we don't know if we're insuring legals.
But we don't mandate in our bill that insurance companies have to reimburse.
Illegal, if he's legal or not.
Well, then that's up to the doctors and the hospitals. I'm not going to tell them.
Don't ask.
All I'm saying is that's up to the doctors to decide that. Yes, yes, you in the blue. Yes, yes. Now that.
Because we were told to begin with that we were going to have the same coverage as our government leaders. Now, I haven't heard any of them that are willing to give up their mission, so why not?
That may be the most poignant question of the day. Because the health thing that what I just described for you, well, with that, you know, we don't have the pre-existing thing, but the system that we're setting up with the gateways and the exchanges is exactly what we have. Exactly. Absolutely. Now, let me explain what we have. The insurance program that I have is the same for any federal worker, same as a postal employee in Des Moines, or someone who works at the federal building in the Farm Service Agency, or a postal employee in California. We're all in this same thing. What does that mean? It means that every year I have an exchange. I have a gateway that I can go to. I have 21 plans that I can pick from, 21 that I can look at. Now, when my kids were little, I had one plan. When they were growing up, I got a different one. Now that they're gone, I have a different one. But I can go there every year and pick and choose. And I know exactly, that's what we're trying to set up here, is a gateway or an exchange. Every health insurance plan will come into that gateway. The only thing that we're saying is that all insurance companies on this gateway, or if they're employer sponsor, must meet certain minimum requirements. One, can't take into account pre-existing conditions. You can't have lifetime caps. You can't drop someone from your policy because they get sick. The only thing you can drop them is if they don't pay their premiums. But what we are setting up is exactly the same as what we have for ourselves in Washington. And the plans that I am able to get at, you will have access to the same things.
I want to see that.
Yes, sir. And can I just add one thing before? The only thing I would add is one of the reasons that our health insurance is so cheap is because we got a big pool. We got a lot of people.
We'll have a bigger pool if you have a solid.
That's right, and it'll be cheaper for everybody. I want you in my pool. I do. Yes.
First of all, thank you for the quote from Humphrey, because that should be the emphasis. We first should promote general welfare and then talk about how we can afford it. I visited a very poor country many times, and they have put the focus, they've redefined health care so that you have care for mothers right at the beginning.
Right.
Lowers costs, and they have care for the elderly, which ensures that they get outside. But how can we switch the focus away from just cost issues only to the way it will help all Americans, even though maybe I, with my very good plan, might have a little less good plan, but it will still be better than seeing people going without any insurance at all?
Well, as I said, I think, I'm trying, and a lot of others are trying, to shift a lot of the focus to trying to keep people healthy in this country. If I ask the question of this audience, how many of you would rather be healthy than be sick? Kind of a dumb question, right? Of course, we all want to be healthy. But then if I ask you, how many of you, when you go to see your doctor, your health professional, really get good information and supportive services for staying healthy and being involved? Few, but most people don't. You go to a doctor and you get a prescription. You know, we have, I think if I remember right, and this is about round figures, we have about 30, 34 million doctors' visits a year. They write 3.5 billion prescriptions for drugs. I always ask people, when was the last time you went to see a doctor and you didn't get a prescription for a drug? You know, and sometimes, you know, what you really need is you need some help and support in your diet, in your nutrition, to be helped to quit smoking, supportive services.
And if they don't follow what you tell them to do, what then what happens?
That's their problem, but I want to build in.
Senator,
why do you leave me alone?
One or two questions.
I got till 3 o'clock. No, what I'm saying is, rather than the stick, we use the carrot. If you do these things, you will get additional benefits. But if you don't do them, that's your own problem if you don't do them at all. I mean, yeah. See, I was here, now I've got to go over here. Oh, no, I was over here, now I got to go here. Yes. Yes.
I'd just like to make a couple suggestions, okay? I think there hasn't been enough talk about tort reform.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Come on! Yeah. Well, I'm curious, we can save thousands of millions of dollars with tort reform, okay? Not only tort reform, but I spent some time down in El Paso this last winter. The people in Juarez come to the U.S. for health care, free health care, of course, because they don't have insurance. You know, I think that everybody in this country gets health care when they really need it, when it's an emergency, okay? And I understand your desire to have health care that goes from cradle to grave, and that's important. It really is. But I don't think that a primary health care facility like this should be in the business of providing housing and helping people find houses. Why is that health care an opportunity? I don't understand that.
I can answer that if you want me to. That's actually not part of our healthcare clinic. The housing that we do comes from the HUD funding, the federal funding for HUD. That is not part of the healthcare clinic. It's just adjacent to what we already do. We kind of mix all of that together. But the funding we get for healthcare is not used for that. That's a separate funding stream.
Didn't know that. Okay, now I'm going to come. I already called on you. How about you in back of you there? In the white. Yes, the white.
Thank you. I'd like to tie in with the gentleman who just talked about corrective reform. In the bill, it says that the bill that I looked at, there's two lines, and all it says is that the citizenry and the insured cannot sue the government. We understand that. We understand that, and there's no recourse at all on that. But when every year $200 billion is spent on malpractice insurance, because doctors, 5 out of 6 of them, want to give additional tests to make sure they don't make a mistake and get sued, when we have juries who they think it is a casino night, lottery, whatever, when they award someone who did not take responsibility for their own health, and they still get $50 million, that's more than they ever could have dreamt of earning in their lifetime. Where is tort reform? Because, in my estimation, the $200 billion trade-off for not having tort reform is a sellout by me. I'm 72. $500 billion being cut from Medicare, but $200 billion every year that the doctors have to pay. Wait a minute. What's fair about that? Why should these things keep going? You could socialize even that part of it and still make sure that get treated right if there's a mistake. But I say dismantle the whole thing as far as Medicare, malpractice.
Okay.
I hear that. Page 124.
I wrote that down.
Section 223.
I don't know. You know, there are four bills. There are three in the House and one in the Senate. We still have one bill yet to go, and that's out of the Finance Committee. We haven't seen that bill yet. But our bill, the one we did on our Health Committee, is out there. But let me respond on this idea of tort reform. One of the things that I have been looking at is how much waste, fraud, and abuse there is in the Medicare system.
Absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of it. Well, let me read some of it. Okay, here was Pfizer. Some of the five largest pharmaceutical companies have a history of fraud in Medicare. Pfizer, which just recently was ordered to pay $9 million in overcharges to the state of Wisconsin. Warner Lambert, one of the huge pharmaceutical companies, just settled a $430 million, $240 million of which was not tort, it was a criminal fine. Criminal fine. Hoffman LaRoche, another big pharmaceutical, a $500 million criminal fine brought by the state against them, and a whole number of states, and they were convicted of a worldwide conspiracy to fix prices. $500 million they had to pay in a criminal fine. That's the pharmaceutical companies. Private insurance, United Health, just paid $350 million to settle a lawsuit by you or you? No, by the AMA, the American Medical Association, and state medical society sued United Health again for price fixing, and they settled for $350 million. Aetna, you've all heard of Aetna. Aetna just paid $470 million to settle a lawsuit not brought by patients, but brought by doctors. Physicians brought this, $470 million for fraudulent activities by Aetna. You want to just let them go skate-free? I don't. I want to hold their feet to the fire. I want to hold their feet to the fire. If any of you can dispute this and can give me evidence of this, I'm more than willing to take it. But of all the expenditures in healthcare in this country, about 1% goes for tort.
We've got time for maybe one more question.
About tort, these kinds of things. So even if you got rid of all the tort and you let these pharmaceutical companies run roughshod over you, and the insurance companies go ahead and fix prices and run roughshod over you, you're still only going to save 1%. So if any of you have anything different than that, let me know. Yes, sir.
Okay. I have a question. What is wrong with freedom? What is wrong with making Americans decide for themselves what they want? You mentioned the health care plan with a $5,000 deductible. I had a $5,000 deductible plan. I loved it. The premiums were less. Stop treating us like we're children. Yeah. You take all of our money, you spend it, and you waste it. You just talked about all this fraud. In government, there's a lot more fraud than there is in the public.
Yeah. 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 That's the biggest fraud there is.
This is not health reform. This is control. Control over our lives. And you're smiling right now, but we know it. As Americans, we know something's wrong. Our country is slipping away.
Do you have a question?
On the idea of freedom. We want to be free people, so my question to you is, what's wrong with freedom?
Well, obviously, I spent a lot of my time in the military fighting for your freedom. And I would say this, that we do have the founders of our country, our forefathers set up a representative system of democracy.
It's a republic.
So I do listen. Obviously, there are some people who have concerns here, other people who are more supportive. We're trying to wade through all this to hear everybody. I don't think it helps to shout or to accuse people of bad motives or anything like that. I've not accused anyone of any bad motives.
You just did. You accused me and everybody else of being part of some conspiracy.
No, I did not. All I said is that there have been a lot of reports. There's been a lot of reports. And I have a web that was just taken down yesterday on six ways to embarrass your congressman. That web was just taken down yesterday. Well, I don't mind being embarrassed. That's part of my job. I don't mind that at all. But there's nothing wrong with freedom. And I will say this. We are, aside from the minimum things that we're putting in there on insurance, like pre-existing conditions, can't drop you, no lifetime caps, the things I enumerated for you, that's in every one of the four bills that are three in the House, one in the Senate. Aside from that, if an insurance company wants to come on the exchange and provide a low-cost health insurance program that has a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible, they're more than free to do that, and you're more than free to take it, my friend. You're more than free. But again, you'll be able to shop around. That's the idea, and to see if that really is what you want. No.
Insurance plan that's government supported. They take tax dollars away from us, subsidize that plan. Employers are going to bail. You know this.
Well, there'll be.
People have less. People have less options.
There is. So
we are being. Treating like children.
No.
They're taking away our freedom. They're taking away our money. And knock it off.
I disagree. I disagree with that completely. Way back and back. Okay, I got to get clear back and back. Yes, yes. But I won't be able to hear you, though.
Thank you so much for calling on me. I think the biggest problem is fear. Because I think these people are afraid because in this era of transparency, we don't know what's going on. We're here to answer questions, but we still don't know. It's misunderstanding, and why can't we take our time?
Well, I didn't hear the last part of the question.
Why can't we take our time?
We can take our, my gosh, we've been, I started my hearings on my part of the bill back in December.
Whoa.
9 months ago. And as I said, we had long markup sessions, 13 days, 54 hours. We had 288 amendments filed. As I said, we adopted 160 amendments by the other party.
And what's the plan?
Our plan is out there. Our bill is there for everyone to see. It's there. You can get it right now. The Affordable Health Choices Act for America, that's our bill. I told you, the only one that's not out there yet is the Finance Committee bill, and that will be out, I hope, sometime in September on that, I hope.
And when are you going to vote on it?
Well, I don't know.
The next day?
No, I mean, it'll be brought out on the floor of the, and again, representative democracy, your senators and your congressmen will debate it and vote on it. It'll be an open debate. As I said, when we brought our bill in our committee out, we didn't limit one amendment. We never stopped anybody from offering an amendment. There were 700 and some filed. We said, if we have to slog through them all, we'll slog through them all. Well, after about 288, people didn't want to offer any more. And some of them were duplicative amendments anyway. Some were two or three amendments filed on the same thing. So, but there were, as I said, we debated 288 amendments, if I'm not mistaken. We adopted 160 Republican amendments. So I thought that was pretty lengthy and open debate. And again, the bill is there for everyone to see. It's out there. You can get it on the web site. It's all out there. And so are the House bills. There's three House bills and one Senate bill. So nothing's trying, no one's trying to hide anything. It's about as transparent as you can make it.
Are you hearing us?
Real quick, Senator, have Congress run any models on what the cost will be after these new mandates are implemented? Because I have insurance right now, but if my insurance is required to have no limits and no capability in terms or anything like that, insurers are going to actually raise my prices. Have you run some models and estimated what the cost increases will be?
Well, we did on our bill. The one
your bill, but not mine.
Well, no, the bill that we, not my insurance bill, I mean the reform bill.
What did you find out?
Ours came in at about $600 billion over 10 years.
No, I'm just asking, do you have an idea of what percent my health insurance premium will
what we're hoping is that through this exchange and letting more insurance companies come on, that competition will drive the price down. I mentioned my friend in Storm Lake, who,
that's the guy I was thinking of.
Well, the guy in Storm Lake, he's a small business. He has 12 people in his employee. One of his employees had a kidney transplant. Another employee came down with cancer. And in 2 years, his insurance premiums went up 100%. He has a $5,000 deductible. So I said to him, I said, Art, why don't you go get another insurance company? He said, I can't. I only got one that'll offer me insurance out in Storm Lake, Iowa. See, with the gateway, with this exchange, he and all other small businesses will be able to go on there, and he'll then join a small business in Des Moines and a small business in Kansas and a small business, and they'll be able to pool and get a much cheaper rate and be able to shop around
for
different insurance.
That's
about
the big employers. I work for a big employer.
Yeah.
I have terrific insurance.
I bet you do, yeah.
I have decent premiums.
Sure.
I know that my rates will go up.
I don't think so, because there'll be more competition out there unless you don't believe in. I mean, I just think with them competing, they're going to want to insure your large employer, and there's going to be some competition because every insurance company will have to abide by these minimums. So everybody does. Then what happens is perhaps we'll start squeezing some of the inefficiencies out of these products that are out there. At least that's what we hope competition will do anyway.
Senator Harkin, so I have been a part of the healthcare profession since I've been 16 years old, and I have seen a lot of changes happen. Uh-huh. And in 25 years that I've really spent the time to really see the changes, nothing's gotten better. Our health costs are still high. Our premiums are going up. I would like to ask these people, what solution do you have?
I think I'm going to give you two. Can you?
I got to go.
Okay.
Can you name a government program that has gone down in price?
And the supplies were part of all this making it go lower. They had their chance. It's not worked.
So you don't
know. Wait. Can we just?
I'm not talking about it. Can you
okay.
think the government's going to make prices?
Tone it down. I know it's hot in here, and we've been here long enough. I apologize for the heat. I had no idea, and neither did Ted or Kelly. We just didn't know how many people were going to show up. I will say this, and this, again, is just sort of my valedictory, I guess you might say, on this whole topic. The point you make about we're spending more and more money and we're getting sicker and sicker and sicker, that is true. And I still say the reason is we're not putting enough emphasis on keeping people healthy in the first place. And we got to focus more on prevention, more on wellness. We got to make sure that this is not part of the health bill, but on my other capital, we're in agriculture, we're redoing the children's nutrition bill. We got to get better food for our kids in school. We got to have exercise for our kids in school. They've taken away our playgrounds. They've taken away recess. We got to get fresher foods and fresher meats and fresher vegetables for our kids in schools. Get them exercising again. And then we got to get people in early for preventative services. You know, it's unconscionable that in our day and age somebody has to die of colon cancer when you can get it early and prevent it. Or mammogram screening. Both of my sisters died of breast cancer. Why? Because they were poor and they lived in rural areas and never got any examinations. We got to get people in early for these things. And that's why I stress we got to have better prevention and better wellness. That's really the only way I think that we're going to keep our prices. Thank you very much for coming here. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much. Thanks, Ted.
All right, thank you.